Hello and a very warm welcome indeed to Quadriga, coming to you from the heart of Berlin. And this week the focus is on the eagerly awaited second meeting between US President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. It had been hoped that the summit in the Vietnamese capital Hanoi would use the promise of economic development to build on their historic first meeting in Singapore. But the summit finished earlier than planned after the two leaders failed to bridge their differences and no joint statement was signed. It seems that for the time being, the hope of trading concessions on economic sanctions for concrete denuclearization measures will not be realized. So our question on Quadriga this week is, no deal in Hanoi, what next for Kim and Trump? And to discuss that question, I'm joined here in the studio by Dr. Jin Hyun Jung from the Institute of Korean Studies at Berlin's Free University. He says no more tug of war. Instead, it's time for the US to show that it's also willing to take irreversible steps towards peace for our future generation. Also with us, Eric Kirschbaum, author and journalist who writes for the Los Angeles Times. And Eric believes that talking is better than testing. Trump deserves credit for convincing North Korea to at least temporarily stop testing nuclear weapons and firing missiles. And a warm welcome too to Cherry Chan, Hong Kong-born journalist, currently with Deutsche Welle's social media and Asia desks. She argues that China is supportive of more US-North Korea interaction, as long, that is, as they don't get too cozy with each other. It doesn't look as though that's going to happen for the time being. Thank you all three for being here on Quadriga today. I'd like to begin with you, Jin Hyun Jung. Let me ask you what your response is to the truly dramatic developments in Hanoi.
Well, obviously, the last night I was full of expectation and hope. Mm-hmm. However, when I woke up in the morning, you know, I immediately looked at the news media and found myself very frustrated. However, obviously, yeah, peace seems to need more patience and time. Although we've been waiting for 70 years so far on the Korean Peninsula.
So a long time frame. You said you had expectations and hope. Can you describe those expectations?
Well, basically, the North Korea, especially last year, shows that they're, especially the leader, Kim Jong-un, mm-hmm. Shows his firm will to some process for the denuclearization. So last year, they shut down and also it literally exploded one of the nuclear test site. And also there was no test, right, as you mentioned. So and I expect that the United States government, especially the Trump government, would do some progressive step forward, especially the for the demands of North Koreans, request for the next steps. Mm-hmm. However, it didn't happen. So that's why I was frustrated in the morning.
Cherry, you are nodding.
No, actually, I think that from the China's point of view, they didn't really expect any agreement or peace deal to be reached in this summit. Like before the summit happened, they actually already said that they know that a denuclearization process is a really slow process and it cannot be reached with just one step. And so they didn't really have a lot of expectation. But I think China is rather disappointed by not having sanctions or partial sanctions lift on North Korea. Because I think China's concern, the biggest concern of China is the economic development of North Korea.
When you talk about China, are you talking about the Chinese authorities or about the Chinese people? Because you're very much coming from a social media perspective.
Yeah, what I was talking about is the voice of the Chinese media, like the Chinese state media. But about the Chinese public, actually, they also don't think that it would be such a remarkable summit. They were after this talks breakdown, people on social media, they were saying that, like, we know that this is a political show and it's just a comedy and we're laughing about it. So,
a political show, a comedy, Eric, or a major setback for the U.S. president, or
no,
all three?
I don't think it's a setback at all. I mean, I think the expectations were probably a bit too high.
Driven by Trump himself.
Yeah, but he was trying to scale it down by saying he's in no rush. But at least they're talking. I mean, let's roll back the clock to a year and a half ago. Fire and fury, talking about Rocket Man, rocket missile tests towards Guam. It was a really tense moment. And my button's bigger than your button. I mean, this is only a year and a half ago. And now they're sitting down and talking. And, okay, they didn't come up with a great deal today or whatever. But at least they're going to keep talking. So I think to call it a failure is wrong. I think a lot of people in the United States in security are probably relieved that Trump didn't get away too, did not give away too much. That was definitely a fear.
He didn't give away anything this time around.
Well, there might be some diplomatic relations opened up, and they're agreeing to continue to talking. But there was a real fear after the Singapore summit in June that Trump would give away too much, that he would reduce sanctions before North Korea was really willing to give up nuclear weapons. And that's the key to the whole thing. And there's relief in the United States right now among people who have followed this closely that he did not go too far.
But aren't the Americans a bit disappointed that compared to the first summit, there's essentially no change and no progress at all? Because, like, the fire and fury is, like, as you said, 1.5 years ago. But then after the Singapore summit, I think the Americans or people in the world, they are expecting more coming out from this.
Sure, there was expectations and there was a euphoria about that. And it was a remarkable situation when Trump was suddenly calling him his friend and things like that. I mean, maybe it's not a good idea to be called a friend by Trump. We know what happened to Michael Cohen and other people who have been his friend. But at least they were talking, and at least North Korea was not testing rockets anymore, wasn't testing missiles, had put a freeze to that. And that was a really positive thing. And I think most Americans, even Americans who don't really like Trump, recognize this was a pretty important thing. And he succeeded in areas where presidents from Clinton to Obama to Bush were not able to succeed. He got North Korea talking. And seriously, I happen to have the pleasure of trying to cover a summit in the early 90s right here in Berlin. We stood outside the North Korean embassy for days on end. Nobody would say anything to us. These were sort of low-level talks. North Korea was not talking at all then, and now at least they're talking. They're looking for ways forward.
So, Jin, the world is right, led by Donald Trump, to invest trust in the North Korean leader.
Yeah, I think it's definitely... I definitely agree with Eric's comments on the progress. There is, I think it's drastic progress, and I, you know, I understand that you know, here in Europe and also other, especially in the United States, as well, the people distrust Trump, right? And also, I briefly took a look at the news media says that also Kim Jong Un was watching, or maybe I think the media about Michael Cohen's testimony, and then Kim Jong Un was quite also disappointed and with the you know whole. The Michael Cohen's statement. It seems that Kim Jong-un also started a little bit, you know, doubt about the sincerity of Trump, Trump's side. So, however, actually, as a South Korean, actually, we definitely expect, you know, the especially the Trump administration do more reliable and trustful steps. I think we believe actually he can do that, and he must do that. So now, I think the whole power game seems to goes on to the Trump side. However, also North Korean government, especially Chairman Kim, would definitely do his best to make more progress in the near future.
Don't you think he was expecting too much? Do you think he really thought Trump was going to say, "Okay, we're going to lift the sanctions"? I mean,
no. Actually, you know. I don't know. I don't you know, deeply understand his intention. However, you know, in Korea, we expected at least you know there is some partial reduction, partial definitely the easement of the economic sanctions. Right, this is the first step. At least you know North Korea first showed their willingness to the process of denuclearization last year, and also this is actually reversible step they already made, and they wanted to focus on economic development much more than the military power development. So this is, I think, we understand this is North Korean's form decision. So it's now actually a Trump government, and I think the United States in general must show they're also interested in building up this peace process in Korean Peninsula.
Okay, more on that in just a second. The summit in Hanoi, the one thing I think we can agree on, brought together two very unusual leaders in Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. Of the two, I think less is perhaps known about the North Korean supreme leader. Before I ask our guests what they can tell us about Kim, here are some brief impressions.
Kim Jong-un was given a spectacular send-off as he left Pyongyang for the summit. He certainly enjoys these kinds of events, whether it's military parades or nuclear weapons tests. Since Kim came to power in 2011, he's been a thorn in the side of the United States. But North Korea's economy is in a shambles, due in large part to international sanctions. Kim has vowed to get the economy moving again. In April 2018, Kim met South Korea's President Moon Jae-in for the first inter-Korean summit in 11 years. In June, Kim traveled to Singapore for a summit meeting with U.S. President Donald Trump, but made only vague promises about denuclearization. What can we expect from Kim at the Hanoi summit?
What can we expect now in the immediate aftermath of the Hanoi summit? And I suppose, Cherry, just tell us the one thing we need to know, what I need to know, to understand Kim better.
I think Kim Jong-un is seen, at least in the region. He is the second youngest state leader in the world. And people in the region see him as very progressive, compared at least to his father and his grandfather. And they would expect more from Kim Jong-un because he also studied abroad when he was young and he had some international experience.
Kim, a progressive leader, is that the way he is seen in South Korea as well? Surely not.
I think it's definitely South Korea, actually. Since the inter-Korean summit last year, South Korean people came to think that, you know, Kim Jong-un is definitely much more open than liberal, and at the same time, he already stabilized his own power in the country. So, people changed their perspective on Kim Jong-un a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. It's more positive than negative.
And it's interesting, we talk a lot about the chemistry between Donald Trump and Kim. Mm-hmm. What about between Kim and President Moon?
Yeah, obviously, it seems that they already established really close mutual relationship. You know, South Korea still need to improve the relationship, normalize the relationship with North Korea. Otherwise, you know, there's domestic problems in South Korea, economic problems, and also people's mindset. You know, there's the internal conflicts within South Korea. So, you know, South Korean people, especially the really appreciated and respected the President Moon, really tried to normalize the relationship with North Korea, but without the support from the United States and also international society, particularly Europe and Germany, you know, I think this internal normalization process is not possible.
Yeah. Where is Kim likely to go next, Eric?
On the train back to North Korea. I mean, the fact that he had to take a train is interesting.
He didn't have to take a train.
He doesn't have a plane. That's the problem. He flew to Singapore on a China plane because his government plane is 60 years old and missing some spare parts. That says a lot about the situation in North Korea. It's economically, as the program mentioned, in shambles. Mm-hmm. Kim is the one under pressure. He needs to bring something home. He's got to give up his nuclear weapons.
The pressure within the Korean economy is coming from way down deep, or from the urban power elite?
Everybody. I mean, a lot of the elites in the government have been abroad, right? The 30 to 40-year-olds studied abroad, have been abroad, have been to Singapore, wherever. They see that there's a world out there. They can see what can happen. The whole North Korean media that was following this summit in Vietnam, they would not have missed that Vietnam is a flourishing country right now. Vietnam was destroyed after the Vietnam War. Vietnam was poorer than North Korea. Then North Korea was helping Vietnam in the 70s. Look how the tide has turned. Vietnam and the United States had a very rough relationship, but they're great friends now. Trump was trying to send these tacit messages. Look, North Korea, look what could happen to you. He was saying that every other minute as well. This is the potential for North Korea, sure. What happened to Vietnam.
We'll have a look at that.
I definitely agree with you. And then I like you mentioned about this train trip. So actually, it also means a lot to actually South Korean people as well. You know, South Korea, unlike former divided Germany, the inter-Korean border is not penetrable at all. There is no interactions, right? And also South Korea, there is a national security law really, really prohibit people from South Korea to travel to North Korea without any permission from the South Korean government. But now, and then, so South Korea is like an island. If you wanted to go abroad, you have to take an airplane. So now they found that if you normalize the relation in North Korea, we have already the train railways are connected between North Korea and South Korea. And then once the border is open, we can travel. People can imagine we can travel to North Korea, to China, Middle East Asia, Vietnam, and also up to here in Berlin. So this is completely different imagination about the world, right? This is what we call like a more continental mindset, previously the island mindset. So in a sense, it's a very symbolic action. This train trip also brings to this sort of Korean people's mindset. And at the same time, you know, Vietnam, definitely historically, it's a similarity between North and South Korea, right? So especially the war, there was war between Vietnam and United States, and North Korea and the United States. And Vietnam claimed that they won the war against the United States, and North Korea also claimed that they won this Korean War against the United States. So, and at the same time, Vietnam society still maintained some sort of a socialist system, right? So this is like a maybe Chinese model, partly Chinese model, but also now North Korea is very interested in Vietnamese model for their economic growth.
I just want to go back to your point about the train ride. Actually, it is a very big talking point on Chinese social media. Uh-huh. And first of all, the Chinese people, they're really proud that like Kim is taking this train ride across the whole China. Not the whole China, but like a really long way in China. And China is responsible for providing security and like cleaning, like clearing all the train tracks and roads for him to pass through. And but then they also think that it's a disturbance for them because like when they pass through the whole China, pass through China, like people cannot go to work on time, they cannot take the train on time. And I saw some videos and pictures of people taking about this train and then saying that, like, complaining about it, basically.
Okay, as we have already seen, the first meeting between the two leaders, Trump and Kim, took place 8 months ago in Singapore. This time, the Vietnamese capital, Hanoi, provided, as we've been hearing, the backdrop for the summit. And that was widely viewed as important because there are many who believe that Vietnam's booming economy could provide a model, a template for similar economic growth in North Korea. We'll talk about that in just a second after these images.
Luxury cars manufactured in Vietnam, a sign of a booming economy. Gross domestic product is growing at an annual rate of about 6%. More and more people can now afford to buy a car. Skyscrapers seem to be going up everywhere. Hanoi has become a city that's open for business 24 hours a day. Consumer spending is high. Vietnam's economy is a mix of communism and capitalism. The Communist Party still rules the country with an iron hand, but a recent poll indicated that most people approve of the country's free market system. Vietnam is rapidly becoming a Southeast Asian economic powerhouse. Could North Korea learn from Vietnam's experience?
Jin, it is said that the North Korean authorities have made it their business to study the Vietnamese model that we've just been hearing about, the Doi Moi model, as it's called. Yeah. What will they have learned, and do they view it as a viable model for North Korea's future?
Well, to be honest, actually, I was still South Korean experts also started studying about the possibility and also the potential of this Vietnamese model, whether it is fit into North Korea or not, is a starting point. But, you know, the historical similarities and also the this Vietnam, Vietnamese government was very successful to attract more foreign investments. Mm-hmm. Now Japan and South Korea is the number one and two investing a lot of factories and also development the projects in Vietnam. So, in a sense, like now the previously divided and underwent a severe civil war place, which is Vietnam. In a sense, I think also the people in Vietnamese people also pretty much, I think it's very disciplined, in a sense, like in terms of their personality, and at the same time, their sincerity in working and also dealing with the human relationship. So I think there's some sort of basic similarities also between
Vietnam and North
Korea.
And quite an upbeat assessment. I'd like to come from a German perspective, Cherry. The sense that the economic model from Vietnam for Donald Trump was an incentive that he was offering to North Korea and saying, this is what you could get. And he actually said that the North Korean leader could remain in power and could be the man who enforces this, as it were. How troubled should we be? As I say, coming from a German perspective, where people tend to sort of moralise quite a lot. Yeah, how troubled should we be that this is a despot, a dictator, that this offer is being made to?
I don't think this is a big concern for Trump, that he is a dictator, Kim is a dictator. And I think he wants to really provide this incentive for North Korea to open its economy first. And then we can, he can see after that how the country develops. And I think it's actually quite attractive for North Korea to learn from Vietnam, because Vietnam managed to open up its economy and at the same time hold on to its political power. It's basically still a one-party state. And I think North Korea would really want
to... makes it a very attractive option for North Korea.
Yeah, for North Korea, but not from other parts of the world.
Are we still talking here about... are we talking about North Korea and South Korea, or are we talking possibly in the future about a united Korea?
It's hard to imagine a united Korea. I think South Korea has studied the German unification as a model, and wow, it's expensive, and I think they're a bit freaked out about that. I don't know. I don't hear any talk of Korean unification. This is sort of a pipe dream from people who don't live in the region, but it's a very expensive thing, and German unification is still a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, obviously, the Germany and Korean peninsula share a similar historical moment. However, Germany did not undergo a severe civil war between East and West Berlin, East and West Germany, while North and South Korea underwent this civil war. And then, based on this experience, some of emotional and negative emotional reactions to North Korea, so-called anti-North Korean sentiment, is still strong in South Korea. However, the economic perspective on this unification, I think it must be criticized. Well, obviously, young people in South Korea are concerned about this money, how much money they have to pay for the whole process of unification. However, we believe there is more advantages in normalizing the relationship than maintaining this division. We have to pay a lot of also taxes for the military weapons, and also young people, especially South men, must go to military service, right? And this is also a lot of cost.
This is a problem for the United States, too. The United States is spending a lot of money treasure defending South Korea. And this is one of the motivations of Trump to get American forces out of there. But the nuclear denuclearization has to happen first.
Okay, when you talk about that, Eric, what's on the to-do list for Trump and Kim in the next... they've had 8 months, they've made some progress... we've got a bit of a hiccup situation now. What's on the to-do list for the immediate future?
Well, most likely the preparation that they did not do for the Hanoi summit, they should start having their underlings work out on the preparation a little bit better next time and come a little bit more prepared for some concrete things that can be done.
It was unprofessional.
That's what people are saying. I think for it to succeed, I think North Korea is going to have to give up all of its nuclear weapons, or it's going to have to make some big steps towards giving up its nuclear weapons.
Because this is the big call now.
It's more about who is doing what first. So North Korea is looking at the U.S. and they want all the sanctions to be lifted. And the U.S. is looking at North Korea and they want a complete denuclearization. So who is going to take the first step?
I think Trump has taken the first step. Trump has treated Kim like an equal, as a world leader, something he never had before. So I think Trump... his strategy is to treat him like a world leader. That's Trump's took the first step. North Korea has to deliver, has to get rid of its nuclear weapons.
But from a very simplistic point of view to look at this, Kim has stopped nuclear testing for a long
time. Which is good.
Yeah, so...
14 months.
Yeah, you can also say that he took the first step.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, definitely. This is Trump's rhetoric, right? You know, this is the political, diplomatic rhetoric to deal with, call Chairman Kim as you know, like a friend. Like, but it seems that North Korea also wanted to see the actual, you know, realistic steps from the United States government. You know, the North Korea has always a very stable policy for this normalization and also peace-building process in the Korean Peninsula. However, South Korean, United States, whenever the regime changed their policy, the North Korean policy has always changed. So that's why there's some problems in building trustful relationship. Right?
And on that note, I'm going to have to break you off. We've got to the end of the program. Thank you all three for being here on Quadriga today. Great stuff. Really fascinating discussion. Trump and Kim, what next? That's been our topic this week on Quadriga. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye and tschüss.